The Care Matters podcast is brought to you by the ESRC Centre for Care and Circle, the Centre for International Research on Care, Labour and Equalities. In this series, our researchers welcome experts in the field and those giving or receiving care to discuss crucial issues in social care as we collectively attempt to make a positive difference to how care is experienced and provided.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the Care Matters podcast in collaboration with IMPACT, the ESRC and Health Foundation funded implementation centre. I'm Kate Hamblin and I lead one of IMPACT's delivery models, the IMPACT Networks. More about those in a moment. This episode focuses on values-based recruitment in adult social care. In the context of adult social care, values-based recruitment is a relatively new term. It's been used in retail and the health sector for some time and essentially means working with people whose values align with the organisation or employer, rather than purely focusing on skills, qualifications or prior experience. At the centre of values-based recruitment is the idea that while skills can be learnt, values cannot be easily taught but are essential to providing good care and support. In late 2022, early 2023, IMPACT brought together stakeholders from across the UK in networks to explore and share evidence related to values-based recruitment. Our guests for this podcast were part of different networks from across the UK and have insight into different aspects of the care system and views and experiences related to values-based recruitment. So I'd like to welcome Anne Pridmore, who is a personal assistant employer and CEO of Being the Boss. Welcome, Anne.
Hi.
I'd also like to welcome Dave Beasley, who is Talent Director at Cohesion Recruitment.
Hi, Kate. Good to be with you.
And finally, Joe Parsons, who's Co-Production Manager at Drive.
Hello, everyone. Really glad to be here.
Thank you all for joining me. So I'd kind of like to start with thinking back prior to when you joined the networks and trying to think what values-based recruitment meant to you. Had you even heard the term before? Maybe I'd start with Anne.
No, I've never heard of it before. The first time I heard about it was when I did a piece of research. Yeah, I've never heard it up to that point.
Do you think that it's what you might do, but you might not have called it that, that you do as a personal assistant employer? Are you looking for skills and qualifications, or are you looking for a person's values more when you're interviewing?
I'm afraid I think, as I've been employed myself, that when you go to an interview, you're actually there to sell yourself. That's the point of an interview. And whilst I have a lot of activities I do and interests in my life, it would be easy to ask a question at an interview to say something like, I enjoy going to the theatre, I'm in a choir, etc. How do you feel about that? I'm not sure that you would get the absolute truth because the people, they're there because they want to get the job. That's my take on it anyway. I think for me, it's more important that people come to the job with an open mind and not having worked in a residential setting.
So almost those sort of skills and experience for you aren't conducive to being the kind of PA you'd like.
Not at all, no. I usually recruit by, I do a telephone interview first, and then on the phone interview, I have a series of questions. And if somebody says to me, I've worked for the past 20 years in a residential home, I'm afraid that's a no-no. Because I've found that I cannot break down those barriers. It's too much hard work.
So in terms of, so that's a kind of red flag for you. What's a green flag for you in those conversations that you're having with people? What would you think, oh, yeah, this person might be right for me?
I like somebody with a go-to attitude. The last person that I recruited has been with me 2 years. And it is the first time ever that I've let them go away for 20 minutes and then phone them up and told them that they've got the job. I'd usually leave it longer than that, but I could just tell that this particular person was the sort of person I wanted to have on my team because she was up for any adventure. So that could be a value-based position, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. A sense of adventure isn't a skill or a is it? It's or a qualification. It's definitely a value. Thank you, Anne. I'm going to go to Dave now and ask Dave about cohesion and your whether you'd heard of values based recruitment, what it meant to you at the start of the network.
Sure, thanks, Kate. So yeah, absolutely. As you mentioned, so at Cohesion, we deliver recruitment and workforce solutions right across the care sector. So in all settings, we're really well versed with the process of values based recruitment. I guess it's been in our ways of working for many years. It's not an entirely new process, but I think what we sort of see is that the use of values based recruitment has certainly been formalized more in the sector, probably across the last sort of 5 to 10 years. But what I guess we hear is that it's not always practiced at a consistent level across the sector. And as Anne was saying, really, you know, in care, we want to recruit people who have the right values, the right behaviors, the right attitudes, people who have compassion, empathy, they're inclusive, respectful, adaptable, resilient, you know, all these things that we know are really, really important in care settings. So I guess if we're looking for the right values, the right motivations for wanting to work in care and support, then we know we're going to be looking for people who will offer the most person-centered care and support. They'll stay with an organization or with somebody for a longer period of time. And I guess what we do see at Cohesion is we know some candidates are turned down by the sector because perhaps they're too young or they don't have experience. And I think what values-based recruitment does is that it opens up the door and conversations beyond this. So if somebody has the right values, with the right support, the right guidance, the right training, the right development, what we can do is foster those values and allow them to be great at what they do. So I think that for me, values-based recruitment is all about bringing out the best of someone's values, the best of someone's behaviours, their best qualities, sense of fun and adventure, as Anne has mentioned, getting that sort of conversation started right from the initial stages of a recruitment process. So right from when you first engaging, from when you're engaging with them.
Fabulous. Yeah. And I think we're going to come back and talk about that, the how, because I think that's... Yeah. These are the important questions, I think, for people in the sector is the why would you use this and how then you would put it into practice. But I'm just going to come to Joe and ask about, you know, going into the network, were you using values-based recruitment? Would you have called it that? What's your approach in Drive?
Very much the same as Dave and Anne, actually. We never referred to our processes as value-based. I hadn't heard of that terminology myself, and I don't think many at Drive had. But when we started to look at what that actually meant, we realised that's how we worked. You know, we're, same as Dave just mentioned now, we're very much looking beyond skill sets and looking at, you know, what people's values are that, you know, we can sort of add the training to and add those skills to, because, you know, through training you become skilled. But, you know, we're very much about staff matching and looking at working in a person-centered way. Like Anne said, you know, the one particular person that came for that interview and could see that that person was up for an adventure. And that's what we look for. We look at the individuals we support and what kind of staff members they would need to live their full and valued life and get what they want out of their life. So, yeah, we definitely do have that approach, but it's not sort of formalised. Like Dave was saying, you know, we don't sort of claim to use that approach, but we definitely do. And like I said, you know, we're very much about looking at values-based and person-centred rather than, you know, what qualifications somebody might have. Or again, you know, if somebody's worked in the sector a long time, it's kind of still looking at what their values are behind that. Because I think Anne made a great point there. You know, if somebody's been in a more institutionalised setting, it's kind of like, you know, are those barriers always going to be there, kind of thing.
There's a lot to kind of unlearn, isn't there, in that? Yes, I guess my next question is around the sort of, okay, the how. And we've touched on some of this around those sort of the sort of conversations and discussions and interview process. But before you even get there in your your advertising. How have you found that? The sort of how do you attract applications from people in terms of how do you sell these roles to people that get the right people to apply? And then in the application, what is it you're asking for? Is it CVs or is it just a sort of statement about that gets to the values? How do you start those conversations really? I don't know if who would like to come in first about that initial.
At the moment, it's very, very difficult recruiting personal assistants. It's been like it over the last 2 or 3 years. The people that I associate with, in fact, we're starting some training next month on recruitment of PAs and how to be a good PA employer. Well, my adverts usually start with the nice part of the job. And we're trying all different ways of attracting people. Some people are doing videos and recruiting like that. So I might say something like, I have a lot of interest. I'm on a lot of committees. And I also enjoy the theatre. I'm in a choir. What do you do for a hobby? I personally leave the nitty gritty of the job till the last, the bits that, you know, you don't want to flag up that's the main part of the job. I mean, I can't do a thing for myself. I can use my brain, but I don't walk at all. I've only got the use of one right hand. So I don't start with that because I want to attract somebody to the job first because of the person I am. And then that comes later.
And I think that's the really interesting thing is that it's changing that perception of what a PA is, that it's, you know, if you put start front and center with the sort of that, the nitty gritty stuff, then it misses out actually what PAs and anyone working out of social care should be doing is person centered and helping people live good lives, not just the nitty gritty stuff, the sort of tick boxy, you know, tasks. Thanks. Thank you, Anne. Dave and Joe, do you want to come in at all about the sort of the advert and the what you ask for people to get that initial conversation going?
Happy to jump in if that's good. And Joe would be interested to hear whether you do something similar in your organisation. So absolutely. Right from the outset, you know, we know that as a sector, we've got over 150,000 vacancies on any one day. So the attraction part isn't always the easiest. So we have to really sell the opportunity, but really encourage people who perhaps even haven't thought about working in care before to come and speak to us and come and understand whether actually this is a setting and an area of work that's going to allow them to thrive really. So in our adverts, in answer to your question, This is where we need to make it really clear we're not purely looking for experience. We look to include the values of the organisation, for example, in the adverts, and we use wording that really evokes that the values and the behaviours, I guess, that we're recruiting for the people that that person will be caring for or supporting. Anne talked about videos and if you can use anything like that, especially in today's world where it's a lot going on in the social media space and you know, we're trying to bring more younger people into our sector. If you can bring some of the role to life in a video form, whether that be a short video on TikTok or purely putting a video in your advert process, really bringing the role to life. We called them sort of in the past day in the life of diaries. What does a typical day in the life of a support worker look like? If you can bring that role to life and demonstrate the values that you're looking for, that really allows candidates to connect and decide whether they feel the role is going to be suitable for them, but also, which is equally important, opt out if it's not going to be right for them. That's equally as important. and very quickly, and then Joe, it'd be interesting to hear what you do at your organisation. There is a lot of regulation in recruiting and care, and so there should be. You know, we have to recruit the right people, and we have to collect information such as full work history and references. But we've looked at where we can collect that in the recruitment process. And actually, we don't need to ask everything up front. We can get the information along the process where we need it. So we don't make it mandatory for people to submit a CV. Many candidates apply on their mobile phones these days. And I don't know about you, but if you've tried uploading a CV onto your mobile phone and into an application, it can be really tricky. So we don't make it mandatory. What we actually do, and Anne talked about telephone interviews, we do exactly that. What we actually call them is career conversations. So we've tried to take the fear out of an interview away from the process. So in a career conversation with candidates, we explore those values. We ask values-based questions. So what does good care and support look like to you? Tell me how you're going to demonstrate dignity and respect. And it's just getting to know those people and their values. And that's the sort of the start of the process that we look to follow. And if you can lace values-based recruitment right throughout your recruitment process, it doesn't stop there. That's where we see the better results.
Yeah, and again, sort of that foregrounding of care is about more than the nitty-gritty stuff, isn't it? That it's changing that perception and getting that woven through. You know, it's there in the advert, but it's also there in the that career conversation. I really love that that term. It's there as well, that it's, you know, for first and foremost, it's you know, respect, dignity, good lives, personalization. It's all there at the heading, really. Yeah. James, do you want to come in?
Yes, thank you. I was making a few notes as we were going along then. You know, agree with David. It's getting out there, being seen, and being seen in a positive way. I think, Anne, you touched on, you know, you start your adverts with, you know, the positive, the fun side of things, and then the nitty gritty towards the end. And we, you know, we still talk to a lot of people that think, you know, working in care or supporting individuals is still all about personal care and that sort of side of things. But we really try and, you know, show people that's just an absolute tiny percentage of what the role involves. So, you know, we're always trying to get videos out there of things that we're doing all the time, whether that's, you know, one-to-one support, active support, you know, people that, you know, need the hands-on-hand experience. We show a lot of the group activities or the events that we go to. You know, we went to Pride back in August and, you know, we had a stall, we marched, you know, we were out there doing it. And, you know, staff as well as the people we supported had so much fun. And that's what we want to get across to people. You know, it is really good fun and you're out there having fun together. We are on Facebook. We share a lot of things on Facebook. I'm not sure if it's the most current social media platform now. We're often slightly behind the times, but we have talked about the TikTok videos, you know, making them short and sharp and fun. But we're very much about sort of, you know, sharing stories from the individuals we support as well, sharing their videos and things like that, making it more personal to them, not about us, you know, selling it all the time, trying to talk to people about it and things like that. But we really try and home in, and I think this is what we sort of think about every time we share a video. We want to make sure it gets across that the positive effect a staff member can have on an individual's life, how important that is, you know, and how wonderful an experience that can be for somebody. We talk to a lot of people that have come to perhaps care and support later on in their careers. They've had a totally different career, you know, most of their lives. And very often we hear, I wish I'd got into this earlier. And, you know, so it's just something for us to bear in mind, you know, how are we reaching people? I know, you know, sort of the pay and the salaries, you know, often are what people sort of look at and think, well, I couldn't actually afford to be, you know, a support worker, particularly now in my career. But, you know, hopefully things will get better there. But, you know, that's really great. And a bit like Dave, we try and sort of, you know, make things much more informal. In sort of the recruitment approach, we have open days where people are invited to pop in, have a chat, you know, if it's for them, great. We do have people on standby with application forms, you know, and they're invited to fill one out if they want to. And there's people there to interview if that's what they want. But we don't sort of force that onto people. It's not the first thing we mention. It is all about, you know, people having a chat to the people we support. We always make sure we've got a lovely group of the people we support there, talking about their lived experiences and, you know, a nice sort of variety of staff from different parts of Drive. So, yeah, it's getting the message out there and not being too formal, I think. You know, people just want to find out a bit more. And if it's for them, then we're ready with the application forms.
I think that is one of the challenges that came through in the networks is that, you know, as Dave was saying, like, there are all these sort of regulatory hoops to jump through, but they don't necessarily need to be in that first conversation. But, you know, keep them further down the road, working out which ones are actually essential and doing those rather than putting people off almost at the beginning. You know, once you've got past the, you know, the image problem of adult social care, to then put them off with lots of, you know, employment history, CVs now, you know, do it straight away would be a real shame, really. But yeah, no, thank you. That was really interesting. And I think you've all touched on this, but it'd just be really, I think, helpful for a listener just to tell us, well, why do you, what does it add to you, your life or your organisation to use values first and foremost versus a more traditional approach? What does it give, you know, in terms of better care, better people, better retention? You know, what does it add, really? I don't know who wants to come in.
I think, you know, by being values-based from the very start, you show you value that member of staff from their very first, you know, sort of stages with you. You know, retention is so important. By showing that we value staff members, you know, as much as the people we support, then they're much more likely to stay because, you know, it can be very hard, you know, working in care, in any job really, but, you know, they're so essential. People with the right value set are absolutely vital and essential in this line of work. And, you know, we've really got to show that we value them and that, you know, they will stay with us and they make such a difference in people's lives. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's getting people with the right values and then valuing them to stay. And do you think it makes a difference in terms of retention as you see people staying with you for longer now?
Definitely. I mean, I've worked for Drive for 10 years and I still class as a baby compared to some of the people that work there. You know, some people have worked there, you know, 20 years. And, you know, I think it shows a real commitment to the people they support and to Drive. So hopefully we're doing something right there.
Thank you. Anne, did you want to come in and say what it adds to you, really, in terms of why do you do it? Why take this approach? If you're going to tell another person recruiting a PA, why would you say, do this, don't just ask for a CV?
I think it's quite different for me because I'm it. I am the only person here. I've no HR department to call on if things go wrong. Sometimes value-based recruitment has worked against me because I'm very career-minded and there's quite a lot of time here when you're not having to do anything. So I've had two people leave me because they've got a degree and they've moved on. But that's unfortunately the way things are and there's nothing I can do about that. I personally don't bother with CVs and this will probably come as quite a shock to you. I don't use references because the thing is that if anybody does anything that's wrong here, it's always going to be my word against theirs. So I don't really value references. I don't think they hold much hope at all, to be honest with you. But I think for anybody working on a one-to-one basis, the first priority is to be able to get on with that person because they are here on their own. They're not going to meet other members of staff.
Yeah, so it's a very different working context, isn't it? And I guess your point about career progression is a bit more of a challenge because that's on you really as the employer. But as you say, you don't have this big organization to progress through or a HR function or a training arm of your organization. It must
There's
be very
nowhere to progress here. You stay where you are, I'm afraid. The only progression is to leave and do something else that you've picked up while you've been here.
Yeah. So in a way that the retention piece, which is something that when we were looking at all the evidence, it was sort of being values-based recruitment was being advocated as a way to retain people in the care sector, but not necessarily, I guess, if you're employing
people. I have one person that's worked for me for 26 years. They don't do many shifts now because they do another job. So they do a part shift once a month. And the lady that I've got working for me today is in her 11th year. And then another one's worked for me 7 years. So it can't be too bad working.
It can't be too bad. You got it right. You cracked it. Dave, did you want to talk about the sort of what you've seen in terms of benefits as an organisation?
Absolutely. And it sounds like both Joe and Anne have great retention, which is great given that as a sector, I mean, we sit at around, 30-31% turnover across the sector. And if we compare that to other sectors in the UK, at an average of 15%, you know, we know that as a sector, we can really struggle with retention. And actually, as Anne and Joe have both said, following this approach will not only help your recruitment, but it will help your retention. And it's the very reason, you know, it brings the very heart of what the care assistant or the support worker will be demonstrating, you know, in post, and it's bringing that conversation to the recruitment process. So if you're only asking, you know, those basic questions in the process, you know, checking that someone can meet the needs of the shift patterns, or you're only talking about the experience, in our opinion, you're not giving candidates the very best opportunity to do the best in your recruitment process. And candidates will vote with their feet. You know, there are lots of vacancies out there. We're not only competing in sector, but we compete with other sectors, retail, hospitality. We perhaps borrowed some workers during the pandemic, but unfortunately a lot of those have now gone back. So we've got to do something different. We've got to open up the doors to new people, and values-based recruitment helps that and helps the right people stay with you for longer. Skills for Care have some great data to back this up as well. They also talk around, you know, better, so lower rates of sickness, lower rates of absence, because again, you're recruiting the right people that with the right support are going to do a better job. So that's another really clear benefit of following a values-based recruitment process. And I'm sure Joe was in a role with co-production, and certainly, you know, if you can involve the people you support in the recruitment process, you know, that's even better. What better than matching people with the right values and getting them right? So I think that's another way you can really make values-based recruitment add value in your recruitment and retention process.
Thank you. Now, I'm going to come to the challenges, because I think, you know, it's always important to have a kind of honest conversation about challenges in doing anything in adult social care, because if you're not, then people will highlight those and say, well, you know, you're being a bit over optimistic. But also in having a talk about challenges, there are often solutions, right? You know, you will have encountered challenges along the way and found ways around them. So I don't know if people want to talk about things that they may be find difficult about using values-based recruitment, and maybe ways around that, if there are ways around that. Dave?
Yeah, happy to jump in. I think when it comes to the challenges, what we see is that, and it comes back to my early point around consistency across the sector. So not all care settings can rely purely on values, and that's okay. But you can look for specific skills and experience where needed, and also look at getting the right values as well. And I think, you know, what we tend to see is a variance in abilities when it comes to recruitment. Not all hirers will understand how to best use values-based recruitment or see the benefits of following it. We do hear, some hirers say, I just need somebody to hit the ground running, and therefore I need somebody with experience. And you urge them just to push a little bit beyond that and say, well, actually, if we can look at the right values, can we look at training and developing somebody so that they can, do well in your setting? So I think there's certainly a challenge around consistency, around how to follow values-based recruitment. But I think it's a little bit like what we were saying earlier. In many instances, when you actually start talking about practice and recruitment and what you do in that process, you're probably following values-based recruitment without even realizing it. I think that's the thing. As a sector, we're well versed now at opening our doors and saying, come and meet us at an open day, like Joe mentioned. Come and have a chat to us at an event or whatever that might be. And let's see if this is either a career or something you do alongside the role. I think we've got to be more flexible as a sector, because we're struggling to recruit the numbers that we need, and that's only going to get harder. So I think there's some challenges around those areas.
Thank you.
Why are PA employers never invited to those sort of events?
Yeah, good question.
Really great question, Anne. And I think for you especially, This is something, you're recruiting for yourself. It's really important that you can get your voice heard. So I would agree. I don't think as a sector, we do enough around talking collectively, between different settings, between different, there's brilliant organisations that speak up really loudly on behalf of getting recruitment and retention right. But we're perhaps not always good. It's like social care in the NHS. We don't always talk to each other. And I think that is a really, really great point, Anne.
Yeah, because I imagine, any new approach, there is risk. And I guess for someone employing a PA, the risks are hot. The stakes are almost higher because, this is the person, you employ them, you're responsible, they're in your home. And it's kind of, you've been left, you're not part of these bigger discussions.
Being an employer, a PA employer, is a job in itself, mm-hmm. but we don't get any pay for doing it. Yeah. And it's getting harder because we're not even getting funding to do training anymore.
So those sorts of career progression in the role, that's not on the table anymore because of the training? Yeah.
I mean, I live in Market Harborough. Don't know anybody knows it, but it's in Leicestershire. It's 55 minutes from London. It's quite a posh area. You can get more for walking a dog in Market Harbour than I can pay a PA. Yeah. And that makes it very hard.
Yeah, so there isn't that recognition. Gary, did you want to come in on any sort of challenges you've encountered?
Same as Dave, really. It's about getting across, the positives. And it is hard because, Anne was saying about the training, it's really, really important, because even if you have people, with the right value base, but they're not sure how to sort of apply that to this kind of work, because perhaps they've never really thought about it before. A lot of people, and I say a lot of people, maybe it's not a lot, but, it felt like it on times that, people would come for an interview and see the role as care, the personal care side of things. It's all about caring. Whereas, Drive and I'm sure a lot of other organisations are much more about the support and enabling people to do things for themselves as much as possible and that kind of thing. And those are the things you can train, because it's a different way of looking at it. It's not necessarily, the values are completely different. It's just perhaps, those potential staff members had never really thought of it in that way. So I think, not to have that training and build up those skills must be very difficult. I mean, we're very lucky. We're a good sized organisation. I think we're classed as a sort of a medium sized charity. And I know that we're told that our training is very good. We are using values base, but it's getting that across, isn't it? And it's, I think Dave, you hit the nail on the head. We don't talk to each other enough. You know, I mean, I speak to other providers, but, you know, we don't speak to people like Anne, who, you know, you employ people yourself. And it's those lived experiences that we really need to be hearing all the time and sharing with people who potentially want to come into this line of work. You know, really hearing what it's really like and what the challenges can be. So when they come into this line of work, they know what to expect, you know?
I think that shared learning is so important. I think, Anne, you shared your top five interview questions to get to values, and they were brilliant, and they could be used by any, they're not just people who employ PAs, but any organisation. And it is that cross-sector dialogue that I think is missing, because at the same time, there are big organisations, or even, you know, small and medium-sized organisations with HR functions, with stuff that, you know, could advise you, Anne, on things that, you know, you find very difficult as just a person and with all that administrative burden on your own and no funding to do it.
Unfortunately, I think they are setting a lot of disabled people up to fail, because they get the funding and then there's no help in what to do with it once they've got it.
And I think I'm right in saying that being the boss, that's one of your aims, isn't it, to sort of do that kind of peer support?
Well, it started off as a peer support group, and we used to meet once a month with other people who employed PAs. And there was such a need for it. We did it for about 3 years, and then the funding ran out. So then I started being the boss, in order to support others who were trying to do the same thing. But funnily enough, there's not just disabled people that ring me up. There's a lot of social workers ring me up as well.
Yeah.
Which is a bit frightening, really.
Yeah, a bit frightening. Yeah, and it also just shows how complicated it all is if, you know, people within the systems still can't navigate it as well. So I wondered if maybe we could kind of close and by thinking about going around and maybe having what would be your number one tip for someone who's thinking about, and maybe we don't call it values-based recruitment because it seems not to resonate, but using values to recruit, or I don't know, there needs to be almost a snappier name for it, but what would be your tip for maybe someone in a similar position to you, because you do represent quite a you represent charities, recruiters and people who employ PAs. What would be your kind of tip really around values-based recruitment and how to use it?
Shall I go first? Well, just about half an hour ago, somebody asked me if I'd put an advert in Indeed for them, because unless you're a company now, you can't actually advertise on Indeed. And I suggested to them they turn the advert around and start off by telling in the advert what they like to do in their life, and then in the end tell them, you know, what support they need with personal care, domestic work, etc., in order to attract them to the advert in the first place.
Thank you. Yeah, that's a great tip. Yeah, start with the positive, because that's ultimately what people want. They want to live the most positive life first and foremost. Dave, do you want to go next?
Yeah, absolutely. No problems. I think so me, it's, I'm going to come back to the consistency message and, you know, having a look at your end-to-end recruitment and onboarding processes, you know, doesn't stop at recruitment, I think is a key message here. We talked earlier around getting your adverts right, what you're asking at your telephone interviews or career conversations, but it goes beyond just the initial recruitment stages. So treat values-based recruitment as holistic, see it sort of end to end, you know, in your onboarding processes as well. Look at that induction. How do we support people with the right values to succeed? Perhaps if they're new to care and haven't worked in our settings before, Could you give them, you know, support through buddies and mentors if you're in a setting that allows for that? I fully appreciate that's not going to be at everybody's in everybody's sort of remit to offer that. But yeah, end to end, get those one-to-ones right, get those development conversations right. There's some really good tools out there that can assist. Skills for Care offer tools to support with finding people with the right values-based recruitment backgrounds. We sponsored a PhD around specifically looking at what are those values. And there are tools like Care Character, which allow you to identify those people with the right skills and then support you to help them develop those skills. So you're not alone. It's not always easy to make sure you're being consistent, but it's really important that you look at it from an end-to-end perspective and work that consistency piece out.
Absolutely. And this is something I should have brought up earlier, that this came up in the networks, that this, it's the name values-based recruitment does make it seem like once you've got them in the interview, you're done. But actually it's about more than that. It's about how do you as an organization operate according to these values and make people feel that they can work according to them, but also that they are valued themselves. And did you want to come in?
I just wanted to comment on that because I think it's quite interesting. How do we as individual employers get our hands on those kind of tools?
Yeah, it's finding them, you know, knowing that they're out there. I know Skills for Care have them. They've updated them recently. It's finding them again. But certainly something that Impact is doing is pulling together a web page with resources. We've got your top five questions, Anne, on there as well, as an example of some really brilliant way just to get down to values, you know, really succinctly. But yeah, it's where to look and where to navigate, because, you know, we started the network with an evidence review, so we were like pulling it in from, you know, academic research, but also all across the sector and people's lived experience. And it was, you know, it is a challenge to get it all together and to sift it and to work out what might be applicable to certain parts of the sector and what's more applicable to others is a big challenge. Yeah, absolutely. Jo, did you want to come in?
Yes, thank you. I was going to say the same as Anne and Dave, really. You know, to start off with the really positive adverts and, you know, getting people interested in what you do and talking to them and showing people, you know, what the job can be all about. But obviously being honest as well. But like Dave said, it's or yourself, Kate, actually, it's not just getting people through the door and signing them up. It's that continued commitment that we value you, you're important to the organization as well as the individual, you know, and being consistent with that. I think that would be the top tip for us, really, you know, keeping people that are great at what they do and really understand that, you know, the individuals they support, as well as really getting the values of the organization.
Thank you, that's really wonderful. I'm going to draw it to a close there. But thank you so much, Anne, Dave and Joe. This has been a brilliant discussion. For more information, there's an Impact page going to be launched around values-based recruitment with various tips and hints that have come out from the networks and the great discussions we had there. But thank you all so much. It's been great.